This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. We're discussing Ukraine crisis, which is actually NATO crisis from another point of view, especially if you're in the Kremlin. NATO has advanced from border to border since the end of the Soviet Union, making promises we won't go any further. James Baker did that to Gorbachev quite some time ago. However, we have not kept any of those guarantees and have come up right against the edge of the Russian Federation. The Baltic states, Poland, Ukraine is not a member, but the Baltic states and Poland are enough because Poland abuts Ukraine. I mean, it's practically, it oftentimes has been the same country. At least half of Ukraine has been Poland. So we've not kept any of the promises we made, the U.S. made, under George H.W. Bush, and the Kremlin resents it. So, Professor, from the Kremlin's point of view, they're saying, we demand you promise Ukraine and Georgia, not to leave out Georgia, the other side of the Black Sea, never become members of NATO. What will the Kremlin accept that's less than that?
Well, this is really making that demand was a great mistake on Putin's part. And I would point out that when we talk about the Kremlin, we're really talking about Putin's personal interest in controlling Russia, which he's having more and more difficulty with. In many ways, this is not a geopolitical situation. This is a domestic Russian situation. So I think that Putin will accept anything that will make him look good and make him look like he's really done something. Whereas in truth, he hasn't really done much, although he's been in charge of Russia for a long time. Now, what that is, I don't know, but I think we have to give him a lot of faith. But we can, we cannot do a Munich, which is to say, give away something real.
Can we do a Kennedy Khrushchev? I've given you the example. Can we do that? Can we make both sides feel like they're winning?
Well, my view on all that is that it was, in many ways, it was a crisis that was unnecessary. It was overblown. Khrushchev pushed the envelope. He didn't get anything except, of course, they've got the Lourdes communication base in Cuba, which China now uses. As for the Kennedy administration, I think the true history of the Kennedy administration has yet to be written. And when it is, they're going to look terrible.
The concern I have is from the Kremlin's point of view.
Yes.
The command, both the cabinet, Mr. Putin does work with a large number of men who control the economy and the state security apparatus. He also works with the military that depends upon him to back them up when they're deployed in great numbers, which they are right now. What will they accept? Now, I'll be more provocative. I think that Putin has made Ukraine his legacy, and that that legacy is not negotiable.
Well, in that case, I think that his policy is going to fail with baleful consequences for both NATO and for Russia, because if there is real bloodshed in Ukraine, and there is already bloodshed, there are already Russian troops secretly fighting in Donetsk and Luhansk, and a lot of them are going back dead, and their mothers are complaining about it. And any military operation against Ukraine would, I believe, be potentially, it could be very, very difficult. But just the
Professor, don't we have a military operation right now? The deployment for Operation Barbarossa didn't require September 1st to be a military operation. And on Stalin's side, he gathered forces because he was thinking he would attack the Germans before the Germans attacked him. Both sides gathered forces for an offensive action. Germans jumped first and overran all of Stalin's preparations, including his airfields. We now have the gathering of forces at the Ukraine and Crimean border. The military operation is underway. Do you agree?
Well, I think that's correct. And there is an old saying that wars are caused by mishandled pre-war crises. We have a pre-war crisis now, and nobody is handling it. The United States should be handling it. The way out is to somehow make it clear to Russia that we do not threaten them. But their definition of what threatens them and their Putin's dictatorship is very different from what actually threatens them militarily. But this is extremely dangerous. And if there is fighting, we're going to start falling back into a kind of Cold War confrontation. And Russia will be excluded from Europe. The Europeans will be threatened in a way that they haven't been since 1991. And not for the first time, history will take a great step back.
Professor, you cannot exclude Russia from Europe, or Europe doesn't have the energy to get through the winter. It's not a the president and the secretary of state, I'm glad you reminded me, are making threats that, you know, they'll make threats to the last European household freezes, right? Okay. Blinken met his counterparts in the G7 countries over the weekend in Liverpool, England. And the quote we have from the secretary, meet the press, they are equally resolute in their determination to stand against Russian aggression, to ideally deter it, to prevent it. And we've made clear as well that there would be massive consequences if Russia commits renewed acts of aggression against Ukraine. Massive consequences. They're talking about money, dollars. Now, what dollars are going to buy you heat if you cut off Russian gas through either Belarus, Ukraine, or Nord Stream 2?
Well, what you say is exactly right. What you're saying is that a terrible crisis will follow if this is not properly handled. You're saying that Blinken is talking through his hat. Biden is AWOL. Under those circumstances, terrible things can happen. And a situation in which not only are Russia and Europe confronting each other, but Russia has the tap to turn off energy to Europe is extremely worrying. It would be terrible, but it could happen. I don't exclude that as an outcome. And if the Europeans all freeze to death, they brought it on themselves.
Why did the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor? Why did the Japanese decide that they couldn't wait? One reason, not the reason, one reason is that Roosevelt and Hull and their counselors had cut off the Imperial Japanese Navy to an oil supply from the U.S. And they had to have oil or their fleet wasn't going to be able to sail long enough to attack the Americans. Now, I only bring that up not because we're talking about Pearl Harbor here. I bring it up because energy is a historical driver for decisions made by war commands.
Well, I think that's exactly right. In fact, Roosevelt didn't intend to cut off all the energy, but Acheson went a little bit further than his instructions. But in this case, you have the military and the energy superiority both in Russian hands. And it's not clear what the Europeans will do. But it's not really America's problem. We have high energy costs because of domestic decisions that we have made. They have no provision. Even the French don't generate enough with atomic energy to keep themselves going. There was a time when Europe was the center of world affairs and where the wise leaders and the terrible leaders were found, where great thought was given to national security and so forth and so on. If they don't start taking on those roles again, they could end up in a terrible mess. And I think what you say is absolutely right.
What's your
cold winter would be the least of the problem.
What's your instinct for a timeline here? Can you Can you look to when a settlement is required and or when it gets too late for a settlement?
Well, I think it's getting close to being too late for a settlement. But I would say that what we should start doing is having all kinds of meetings and trips and dinners and discussions and reassurances that NATO is defensive and so forth and so on immediately. They should turn the lights on in the White House. They should go get the president dressed up, dressed in his dinner jacket or whatever his tails, and we should start giving face. I mean, we should get our ambassador in Moscow to really, and people there, we have Russian speakers and experts, and we should spend a couple of weeks really going through this with the Russians. More than that, things like this phone call from the president, and it's useless. We have to get into very serious diplomacy here to craft an agreement that satisfies both sides. And to do that, you're going to have to use weasel words and lawyer talk and all the rest. But the alternative to doing that is not a great Russian military victory. Rather, it is a setback, a serious setback, both for Russia and for Europe.
Professor H.J. Mackinder. International Relations. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.